The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We will have Herm Edwards on today's show coming up at 10:20. We'll talk about the Super Bowl. Of course, Herm was in Kansas City, and he was in Tampa Bay, and what he thought of the game last night and just some tie-ins to the game. Also, ASU football is going to have spring football, and we want to talk about when spring football is going to happen. Where does he want Jaden Daniels to be in at from a weight standpoint and maybe some players that stand out? So a lot on the Super Bowl and a lot on ASU football with Herm Edwards. That comes up at 10:20. Eric Sorensen is going to zoom on in today. So he, of course, for years was the producer of this show. He's still a part of Sports 360. He's just doing a lot now on the high school end of things. We lost Pedro Gomez yesterday, and it was right after the Super Bowl last night. And it was just, I'm just devastated, guys. I'm just devastated today. So what I need to talk through it with Pedro did a lot with us, for us. And it was right after the game last night where it just happened, and my phone was blowing up, and so it's been a rough 12 hours. Let's put it that way, or 10 or 14 hours, whatever it is. So Eric is going to zoom in, and then Kalen Jones will be with us from The Ringer on the Super Bowl and what he saw over at The Ringer. That's Bill Simmons' site, and Kalen does good work over there. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, they take care of you. They take care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. Make sure that you support them. They do great work, and they've been in the Valley for a long, 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 long time. Spurge is over at ASU, Jordan Spurgeon. What was your highlight if you go back on last night? Were you a halftime guy? Were you a game guy? Were you all the above guy? Were you a commercial guy? What was your highlight last night?
Highlight, definitely seeing the Bucs dominate the Chiefs. That was a highlight for me. Commercial.
Why is that? Are you from Tampa Bay, or what's the tie-in? Why hate? What are you doing hating?
It's not a hate, and I've gotten rid of my biases from being a fan before, but, you know, I grew up from Boston. My mom's family from Boston. So always grew up
I see.
Tommy fan, so still have that going. It won't get to cover him, which is probably good. Can get rid of that unless he just keeps playing till he's 65. Who knows? He could at this point.
Right.
So that was cool. And halftime show was great. Commercials. There was two or three. The Cheetos one with the Ashton Kutcher. That one was pretty good. And Shaggy. That one was funny. There was overall pretty good, I think.
I thought the Matthew McConaughey commercial where he was like as thick as this little 3x5 card was just random.
Yeah.
John Travolta showing up looking like me, you know, that was kind of funny. The Jeep commercial got me, you know, I thought that was well done and well played. But it wasn't like the very first one was the movie, and it was like a horror movie.
Yeah.
The very first one. And it was, what is this? I'm not watching this. And then CBS is trying to just pound me over the head with Queen Latifah and whatever the other series was on Thursday nights. I don't even remember because I'm not watching. It doesn't look good. So there was a part of me that was just, please get back to the game. And then the game, I felt like Nance and Romo were whining about officiating in the first half. Yeah, there were flags, but guess what? There were penalties.
Yep.
Was I the only one on that side? I mean, did you see it the same way, or was it like, come on, guys, put the flags in the pockets?
I said this on Twitter last night, too. It's the same thing in baseball when a pitcher can't find the strike zone, and when he starts painting the black a little more, he's not going to get those calls. The Chiefs were holding early on, so the more you show that aggressiveness early in the game, you're going to have those calls called on you later.
That's
if
right.
They're a gimme call, you've already proven to the refs this is how you're playing. They're just going to call that. It's human nature. So that was the comparison I draw. And so I wasn't upset about the penalty. Sure, there were some that could have gone either way, but once you prove that early on, they're going to go against you.
And, you know, there's also that side out there that today is going to say, and I don't know what the number is going to be, but it's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be 100 million viewers. So there's going to be that person lying in the weeds saying, see, the ratings are down. Yeah. And it'll be like 96 million people that watch it. See, the ratings are down. So that person is going to be driving me crazy today. You know, does Gronk retire again? Brady said he's coming back. The storylines around these two teams, will Patrick Mahomes be as great as Tom Brady? I find that discussion to just be mind-numbing. Like, I want to take this pen, Spurge, and run it through my ear and pull it out on the other side. It's so mind-numbing. Like, just let these guys do their thing. Who knows in 10 years or 20 years what it's going to look like? Like you said, he could still be out there chucking it at 65. Who knows?
Exactly, yeah. Someone asked me about that on my show last week, and I just said, let's table that, put it to bed. Call me back in 20 years when I'm still on the air, hopefully, and we'll see what we can talk about then. Because it's not going to be right now. There's no discussion at this point.
But like today, if you're the Arizona Cardinals, okay, you're in the conference that has the defending Super Bowl champs now. You're in the conference where Matthew Stafford has already been shipped off to Los Angeles, and he's saying publicly, yeah, I've got players calling me that are going to want to come out here and play. Marvin Jones is one of them. I don't know if Marvin Jones is going to be a game breaker. I don't know. You have the 49ers that have a Hall of Fame general manager now in John Lynch. Happy for Johnny. I covered Johnny back in high school, and he's done a great job with the 49ers. But they're supposedly going to move on from Garoppolo. So if I'm the Cardinals today, it's, okay, what do we have to do to get this thing? And to me, it's all in the defensive line and offensive line. It's those guys. It's not that you can't win without Tom Brady. But if you have some studs and horses up front, that's why Pat Mahomes was running for his life last night.
Yeah, no, that's the key. Last year, going 8-8, Kyler Murray hides the weakness of the offensive line. When they drafted Kyler Murray, everyone knew the offensive line was atrocious. So you can't say, well, we were 8-8, we were winning for a point, and then just not address it. They have to address the offensive line, because that's what happens in the biggest games. If you don't have the protection, you have no chance, no matter how great, how magical you are, running around, going 30 yards behind the line of scrimmage. If you don't have an offensive line, it's not going to work out.
Well, and you can go through that 8-8 and say, well, what happened at the end of the Buffalo game? Yeah, it could go down as the greatest play ever happened, but you're this far away from losing. It's a game you should have lost. Let's just be honest about it. And there were a lot of those with them last year. So I don't know. All right, get out of here. Have a good day. Good stuff.
Thanks, Fred. You too.
There's Spurge over doing his thing at ASU. The Suns ended up beating the Celtics yesterday. I did not watch much of that. I did watch a ton of golf. And again, today I'm struggling. I'll just be honest with you guys. I'm struggling with Pedro. So it'll be good to talk to Eric here in 10 minutes. But on the other side, Herm Edwards, head football coach at Arizona State. And of course, former ESPN NFL analyst. So we're going to start with the NFL side of things and work our way backwards onto ASU football. That is straight ahead. And then Kalen Jones later on in the show. Busy, busy hour ahead. Stay with us. All right, day after Super Bowl, we have to get the thoughts of Herm Edwards, because here's the thing. We're going to get to Arizona State. I'm doing this interview in reverse because I want to know, as a chief head coach, as an assistant in Tampa, your ties there. Were you torn at all last night going into this game? Or is that like, Brad, that was so many years ago. Come on now. Where were you on this one?
Well, I've got ties in a lot of places in the NFL. 30 years there. So to get it, I know both coaches very well. Bruce actually was, Arians was actually at Temple when I was playing for the Eagles. Mm. And then we worked together my first stint in Kansas City. I was there actually twice when Marty was the head coach. Yep. Bruce was the running back coach. Tony Dungy was the secondary coach. Bill Cowher was the defensive coordinator. And I was a young scout, learned how to be a coach. So we kind of go way back that far with Bruce. Andy was at Missouri. He was an offensive line coach. So I met Andy when I went through there coaching, you know, I was recruiting guys. So when that game is being played, I'm looking at it and going, the only thing I do know is that that Captain America guy, hard to bet against, right? Just hard to bet against. And knowing Tom and watching what he was trying to accomplish, that's football history. I mean, it's unbelievable what they were able to do. And it kind of shows you where he's at. I was fortunate enough to have to be the head coach for the Jets when he was playing in that conference in the AFC East. And we actually won the conference. We won a division title there. But you just talking about a guy, his presence and what he means to a football team. What he did in Tampa, that is remarkable. And that whole team, Bruce and all those guys, how they bought in. But it's the presence of Captain America. When he walks in your building, you just become better. You look at him and you watch his energy and how he goes about things, and players kind of go, we got the guy, so we got a shot. And he pulled it off.
How you look at Tom and you see things through a different lens than most of us. How long can he play from your lens, your view?
I can remember when they drafted, he's with San Francisco now.
Garoppolo. Yeah.
And I was somewhere with him. We were doing an event. And he looked at me and he said, I don't know why they draft a quarterback. I'm playing until I'm 45. I looked at him and said, good for you. Good for you. So he's not 45 yet, right?
Getting there. Not there. Nope. Not there.
I know he's coming back. Crawling he's coming up. Back.
John Lynch.
Yes.
The Pro Football Hall of Fame. A lot of people may not know your connection with John Lynch and what that meant.
Well, it means a lot to me personally. I kind of found that out a week or so ago. John called me. I was his coach in Tampa. He is the godfather of our older son, Marcus. We're the godfather of Leah, one of his daughters. I was just with John, actually, and Linda when they were here, when San Francisco was practicing here. The whole families, we had lunch together, and we masked up, obviously, and we had lunch together. But we had kind of talked about it. I said, man, I think you're going to get in, right? Kind of laughing. And then he gave me a call about a week and a half ago. I said, guess what? I said, got in? He said, yeah. So I'm happy for him, what he's done as a football player and how he's represented the game of football. And then going to the 49ers, being the GM, I was one of the first guys he called when he was actually going to go interview. I said, you'll do a great job. I said, you know what it takes to build a team. You were there with us in Tampa. So now he goes into the Hall of Fame. So now we got three of them. When you think about the guys that we coached down there, it was Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, John Lynch. And we got one more that hopefully is going to get in too, is Rondé Barber. Mm. That'll be four guys on defense. You know, the way it's kind of ironic because the way they played defense in the Super Bowl reminded me of the Buck teams we had down there. We had great defense. Now, I'm not taking anything away from Captain America, but their defense really, really played well yesterday.
When you're watching the defensive side of what Todd Bowles said, this is what we're going to do. Are you sitting back saying, why didn't everybody else do this or try to do this?
Well,
or how did you take that in, Herm, as it's unfolding?
I think this. I think sometimes you have plans of doing that, but if the score gets a little bit out of reach, then all of a sudden you're in a scoring mode. They were in a mode of possessions. They were in a mode of keeping the ball away and not allowing 10-87 and the quarterback to beat them. And they deployed a defense where basically nothing vertical was going to happen in that game. You're going to take everything underneath. But I think the key was this, and don't lose sight of this. Those four guys rushing that passer, they were dominant. They hit him a bunch. They hit him 29 times. He went back, you know, almost 50 times or 50-plus times, and they hit him. And when you have a quarterback running around, you're going to probably win a lot of games because no quarterback likes running around. And Mahomes is fantastic, one of the best quarterbacks at a young age right now, the things he's accomplished. But it goes to show you when you got guys up front that can rush the quarterback and muddy the pocket, boy, it's hard to win games like that.
Yeah, yeah. Herm Edwards with us. Before I get you out of here, I want to talk some ASU. Marcus Williams is someone I've known for a long time. He's not going to be a player. He's not going to put a jersey on. He's not going to put a helmet on. But he's coming to Arizona State to help in a way on a lot of fronts around the athletic department. Have you met Marcus? A lot of people buzzing about this hire, Herm.
No, I think it's a good hire. I heard a lot of great things about him. And the coaches are on vacation right now, except for the head coach. He's never on vacation. And I'm pretty sure he'll be down here shortly, you know, this week. And I'd love to sit down with him and just pick his brain and kind of tell him a little bit about our culture. And then he'll make his way around. And I think, you know, he's a people person. He'll be good for the players. We lost a good guy in Marcus Walker. You know, he left and went to Nebraska, got a great opportunity. and did a great job of mentoring a lot of our players. And that's needed. And any culture that you have, you need people like that in your culture.
Your offseason calendar, do you know yet when you're going to start spring ball? What's spring ball even going to look like? Fans are asking about that.
We're going to start. We're actually going to start on the 3rd of March. So the players are working out right now, actually. They're running and lifting. Mm-hmm. So we're preparing for March, and hopefully we'll get more than 7 practices in. I think we will, to be quite honest. Now we know, you know, forks up, mask up, you know, test negative. That's our rule around here, right? And we're going to start spring ball. It's going to happen. Will they allow fans in? Probably not. But we're actually going to start, and we'll have some practices at night on Friday and Saturday nights, those weekends like we always do. But our players are excited about participating in spring.
What's Jaden weigh today? Do you know?
Right now, about 100 and almost closing in on 190.
Where do you want him to be by the time he leaves ASU?
Probably about 205, somewhere right around.
Where do you think he will be by this summer?
Oh, I think he'll be close to 200, which would be great.
Yeah.
Doing a great job. He's gotten a lot bigger. He's got a frame on him. He's young. You know, his metabolism just eats up everything. Mm-hmm. So, but he knows, because to play in that league, if you watched the Super Bowl yesterday, those quarterbacks get hit now. You know, you got to be able to get up when you get hit.
Last question then is, some players, and I can't go all the way up and down the roster, but there are a couple guys that for fans you say, you know, this dude is coming back and looking much different, or I'm really excited about where he is. You have a couple names just to tantalize.
Well, I think the key to it all is that we had a young group of freshman receivers. I'm not going to name any one of them in particular, but I think that group will develop. We had 3 young running backs, and they were playing the Pac-12, and I think we saw them, how they reacted to that, and I think that's a good thing. Our offensive line, for the most part, is going to be intact. We lose the center, but everybody else is coming back, which is a good thing. So on the defensive side of it, we were able to play some young players as well. So I think the experience of playing 4 games, although it's not a regular season for our young guys, mm-hmm. it's amazing what that has done for them. The confidence that you can almost see in them right now. A lot of confidence, right? And confidence is when you actually get to play in a game, a real game that counts. You gain confidence. And so this team, the youth of it, played some games because, you know, our last 2 games, we got a substantial lead. We were able to put guys in the game, which was fun to watch.
Yep, get some reps. Stay well, stay safe. Thanks for the time as always, Herm.
Thank you, my friend. God bless you.
Here's Herm Edwards with us, and we're back with more after this timeout. All right, away from the Super Bowl, last night, full disclosure, I sat here in this office and I wept. I went and cleaned things up from the Super Bowl, and I looked down at my phone, and it was right around, I don't know, 2 minutes, 3 minutes after 8, and it was a bunch of texts, and Eric was one of the texts, because Pedro passed away. And so I just felt like we should talk about it, because those of you that have watched the show, had some people that sent messages that said, we watched you guys through the years. It's tough, man. I mean, I don't even know where to start on this one, Eric. It's just so out of the blue.
You know, Brad, you and I spoke last night, and I told you that I was pretty much numb yesterday. And then today it's been confusion, sadness. Yeah. I've gotten my spirits lifted by actually being on social media and reading all the great stories from people that have, like you, that have shared personal experiences they've had with Pedro and just the type of person that he was. You know, we all see him as the baseball insider on ESPN and the man of knowledge and the guy who knew everyone in MLB circles and in college baseball circles. But, you know, Pedro to me was much, much more than just someone that held an ESPN microphone a few times a week on SportsCenter.
So he was in San Diego doing preps when I first met him, and Buster Olney was doing preps. I mean, it's how far back? This is in the late 80s, and he's only there for a cup of coffee. And then when he came over here, we would see each other at Diamondback events. I always liked how Buck Showalter would call him Pete. Hey, Pete, you got any other questions? That was just something, and it was kind of fun. And I remember one time behind the batting cage. Remember when Yasiel Puig was just disrespecting the game and Pedro was losing his mind? I've never seen Pedro so upset. I'm standing at the first base dugout for a Dodger Diamondback series, and it's Pedro and Gonzo and I. And those two were just not happy with how Yasiel Puig was acting. And it was just like a swipe at the game and heritage and all that. And I don't know. Did you ever see him mad?
Oh, man. Did I ever see him mad? No, I saw him emotional more than I saw him mad.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's cool just to circle back real quick, especially some of the younger journalists that have shared some of their experiences with Pedro, because he was he truly cared about, you know, helping everyone take that next step in their career or become a more polished broadcaster or learn the ropes of how to cover a team. And he didn't have to do that. And, you know, if he didn't, he was just that kind of person. And it just is, it's just a real abrupt ending, Brad. And I'm not really sure what else to say.
He mentored you, though. I mean, you went through a change. You wrote about it. You decided you wanted to go a different direction and go do something different, but, you know, still do high school and still jump on from time to time here, which was fine. But you actually wrote he helped you through that.
Yeah, he did. He did. I reached out to actually a couple of the people that you see on this show quite a bit, and Pedro was one of them. And he just thought that it was time for me to make a pivot. And he sort of challenged me to grow my brand and expand my knowledge. And I talked to you about this, Brad. You know, I was scared to death and I still am. I've been in this new job of mine for 3 months and every day I learn something new.
Yeah.
But Pedro sort of gave me the confidence and the reassurance that, you know, like, you know, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? You're going to fail, but you're not going to fail. You're going to have success. You know how to work with people. You understand the job. You just have to learn it. And that takes time. But it was nice because, you know, like you, he's more of like my another father / older brother. And we talked about all kinds of things. And very rarely did it have to do with the Diamondbacks or if I saw him at, you know, the Cardinals facilities. I know you did as well. We didn't really talk sports. It was more like, what's going on now with Tukey? Let's grab some lunch soon. Yeah. How's Rio doing? Has he mastered that curveball? Where is he in the Red Sox organization? It was all kinds of cool stuff. And it wasn't necessarily like insider knowledge.
We ran into each other. It was after my double knee replacement. We ran into each other at a doctor's office of all places. And it was a doctor's office where we had to both give a sample and a cup.
Gotcha.
It was one of those. And we're in the lobby. I walk in, it's like, oh, hey, how's it going? And my wife's with me. And he's like, oh, hey, how's it going? Well, hopefully we are going. And but we kind of laughed about that. I ran into him out in Ahwatukee, way out in Ahwatukee at a Fry's in the parking lot. And we talked for, gosh, almost an hour one time. And it was about, you know, you and the, you know, growing this. And when I took the leap back in 2011, there's still, if you go search the website, there's a story from Pedro, having Pedro on in 2011, like very early on in this. And I wrote this that, and you know this, when we first started, people didn't pay on time. It was a pretty harsh lesson. And so there was one time where there was nothing in the bank. And I went to Pedro and said, you know, he's like, hey, don't worry about it. I know you're going to get it. Just keep doing what you're doing. Don't worry about me. I'm good. I'll be here. Don't worry about it. And things turned and we're fine. But there was never this air, like you said earlier, there's never this don't you know who I am deal, which happens a lot in this industry. He just never had any of that. And the time he was on with us from Cuba where he got emotional, I think that was as powerful a segment as I can remember with Pedro.
And to, you know, to pull back the curtain a little further, Brad, you know, when we started this and we were building the insiders, Pedro was one of the first ones to jump on board. And I remember at the time we were on Fox Sports Radio and obviously Pedro was on ESPN and there was a supposed conflict of interest. But he's like, no, you know, it's fine. Let me just talk to someone at ESPN and I'm pretty sure I can get permission. And I thought to myself, there's no way ESPN is going to allow him to do this. But sure enough, they did. And Pedro, like you told me last night, he never said no. if he couldn't make the time that I would pitch him, he would figure out a time around there to make it work, just because he felt he liked coming on with you, and he felt there was a connection. And it was just, you know, it's cool to be a part of it. You and I get into this, not just, we don't get into it to cover the sports. We get into it to discover people, yeah, and we get in it to learn about people and tell stories. And Pedro was filled with stories, and he was one of the greatest people I've ever met. And I can say that confidently.
What was it like when you're trying to get him on a show and there was a big news thing that was happening and he had to balance between you, ESPN, and you to me, and we're on the fly? Was there ever a time he's like, I got 2 minutes and then I got to jump on and do this? Things are breaking all over the place. What was that like?
It was more of reshuffling. It was, hey, I know we had 10:20 locked in, but so-and-so is holding a press conference at 10:10. It's not going to be done by 10:20. And then I have an ESPN live hit that's probably going to be here at around 10:40, but that's only going to take a few minutes. But just to give us a little cushion, why don't we just plan on 10:50? Like, that was usually, and throughout that little 30 to 40 minute window, he and I were constantly texting like, hey, sorry, this thing's still going on. I'll keep you in the loop. Okay. If it doesn't happen, that's okay. No. We're going to make it happen. I promise. We're going to make it happen. I know you guys are on until 11. I will find time in my schedule, even if it's for 5 minutes. Or he'd say, I can join Brad, but I have to be done at this particular time. And as a credit to you, you always got him out when he needed to be out. And I think that's one of the reasons why he kept coming back on the show, because he was true to his word and you were definitely true to yours as well.
Yeah. Good stuff. Hard day, man.
Yeah.
Just hard day. I'll let you go off that. Be safe. There's Eric Sorensen, and we're back with more after this timeout. As promised, Kalen Jones with us from The Ringer, the day after the Super Bowl, to jump on in on all things, not just from last night, but also to take a look ahead. What struck you most last night, Kalen?
The complete dominance. You know, I don't think we expected Tampa Bay to have its way with Kansas City the way that it did. I think if we were expecting anybody to kind of run away with that matchup, it was going to be the Chiefs. But, you know, Tampa Bay managed to exploit, you know, the most obvious weakness in Kansas City's game, which was going into that matchup. They were depleted along the offensive line. And, you know, everyone really talked about all week, there was the potential of, you know, Kansas City's offensive line being taken advantage of. But I think most, including myself, you know, expected Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, that combination to be enough, you know, to overcome whatever deficiencies that they had along the front. And, you know, it's been proven in a lot of other Super Bowls before this week, or this past weekend, you know, you need an offensive line to be able to hold up against a legitimate pass rush. And, you know, give credit where it's due, Todd Bowles and Tampa Bay's defense, the game plan that they came up with and the pressure that they were able to consistently generate on Patrick Mahomes ended up being the difference in that game.
How about the coaching side of things? You mentioned Todd Bowles, but, you know, you flip it up to the higher level. The Andy Reid against Bruce Arians matchup, it felt like BA had Andy scrambling all night long.
In a sense, Bruce Arians absolutely did have the upper hand, I think, against Andy Reid on Sunday night. And, I mean, a lot of it had to do, again, with that offensive line matchup. And then when you look at what Kansas City was not able to do in terms of adjusting, you know, Tampa Bay was able to get pressure by just rushing four passers. They were able to allow their secondary to play a lot of press man coverage and not allow the top to get taken off, playing a lot of too high deep safety looks and not allowing Tyreek Hill to get behind them. So they eliminated that explosive passing game. And surprisingly enough, you know, we don't talk about a lot of weaknesses in Patrick Mahomes' game. He's not the best when it comes, you know, operating within a quick game passing system, being in rhythm. A lot of his passes and long completions are coming off schedule in what he's able to do from outside of the pocket in terms of scrambling and, you know, generating or allowing his receivers to have more time downfield. He's not the best within the quick game. And I think, you know, Tampa Bay kind of exploited that, especially because of the personnel that they have. Again, great pass rush. But we don't talk about enough about the great secondary play that they had in terms of Carlton Davis and Sean Murphy Bunting on the outside and what they were able to do in mitigating that passing game.
Kalen Jones with The Ringer with us on Super Bowl and some other things we'll get to in the NFL. I hate whining about officials. I just hate it. And I felt like by halftime last night, even on the broadcast, like, oh my gosh, there's so many penalties and the officials are controlling this game. And it's like, I don't know, every replay, there's something that is happening. Were there too many flags in the first half for your liking?
For my liking, absolutely. But like you said, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of the penalties that were being called, I thought were just. And maybe if you look at some of those pass interference calls, that maybe the one on Tyrann Mathieu in the end zone where, you know, it goes over his head. But it's a toss-up in that sense. You know, there was enough contact on the play. There was enough of, you know, the ball wasn't completely within the vicinity, but it's a callable play. Like, he committed a foul on the play. I'm going to look at that and say, hey, that was callable. So I think, to me, when you have, you know, a team who is getting penalties called against them like that, you know, it usually comes down to whether or not they were able to put themselves in a situation where the penalty could be called or whether it wasn't. And so The Kansas City did.
I got a little worn out with the Brady versus Mahomes storyline very early in the week. Two different eras. I mean, Tom's still doing it and Patrick's just coming up. And so now the debate today is, well, all of a sudden, is Tom Brady the greatest quarterback ever? I know we have to fill airtime. I get it. But are we really going to go down that path? Was there anything last night that had you say, well, you know what? You know, watching him after tonight, he probably is the greatest. Was there anything to change your mind, Kalen, that pushed you that direction?
Well, it wasn't so much that he changed it. You know, he had already had solidified himself as the greatest quarterback of all time. And really, you know, Patrick Mahomes, the narrative was that, you know, Patrick Mahomes, this being a key step in him towards, you know, potentially, you know, down the road, 15, 20 years from now, potentially taking the throne from him. And I think the big talk, you know, going into, you know, this week will be about how, you know, it doesn't look like Patrick Mahomes will ever be able, you know, to take over as the greatest quarterback of all time. There's still, you know, 15, 20 years left of his career for him to figure that out. But as someone who definitely indulged in that narrative talk, I mean, it's fun to discuss in terms of the legacy and everything else, because quarterback is such an integral position to, you know, football. And, you know, it's such a highly publicized position. And because they're two of the most talented quarterbacks to ever play the game, or at least one is the most winningest and the other is the most talented, Patrick Mahomes, for sure, in my opinion. So I think, you know, the conjecture that's going to happen moving forward, I mean, it's fun to take part in. I will admit to that. But, you know, there's still time for Patrick Mahomes to write his legacy. And obviously, even with Tom Brady, you know, at 43 years old, there's still time for him to continue stretching his legacy. So, I mean, it was fun for a week and it'll be fun for the next year or two, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. No, that's a good way to put it. Kalen Jones with The Ringer with us for a couple of minutes. I want to transition from the Super Bowl now to look to the NFC, because the Arizona Cardinals sitting here and Cardinal fans are saying, where do we go from here exactly? Because this side has the defending Super Bowl champs. You already have seen movement in the quarterback market with the Rams getting Matthew Stafford. What's going to happen in San Francisco with Jimmy Garoppolo? There's even some stuff about Russell Wilson in Seattle. So I want you to look at the NFC West and the NFC and just give it to me straight on the Cardinals' chances of getting somewhere, some traction in the next year or two, one. And two, what do you expect here just in the offseason, the next 60 to 90 days in terms of quarterback movement or team movement in the NFC?
Well, so one, the key for the Cardinals to advance, you know, or at least compete within the NFC West, I mean, it's an uphill battle. And I think it starts with, you know, Cliff Kingsbury taking the next step in his evolution as a head coach, and also Arizona, you know, taking advantage of the offseason and really, you know, building up on that roster that they have in place right now, which, you know, obviously they have Kyler Murray in place, which is huge. You have DeAndre Hopkins on the outside. How can you supplement that offensive attack? How can you supplement the offensive line to be ready to go in the next year and really compete with these high-powered offenses that you'll be competing against in Seattle, potentially, if they are anything similar to what they look like last year, or at least in the first half of the year. And what you said in Los Angeles, what they're about to get in Matthew Stafford, entering Sean McVay's system. And then if San Francisco looks anything like it used to. I think the second question, you know, addressing the quarterback movement, if, you know, a quarterback ends up in San Francisco, if there's a new quarterback under Kyle Shanahan, that will change the dynamic in the NFC West altogether. And it could look like the most competitive division as it looked, you know, throughout the first half of last season. Mm-hmm. I expect there to be tons of movement. I think Carson Wentz is probably going to be the next domino to fall in terms of the quarterback market going into this offseason. I know that the Bears and the Colts have been reported to be the most contentious bidders for his services going into the next season. So we'll see whether or not either team is able to get him. But yeah, I think the NFC can look a lot different based on how this offseason really shapes up. And when you look at it, there's really only three or four elite quarterbacks, you know, in that conference to begin with. And really, if any team is able to add on even an above average player, like the example with Los Angeles and adding Matthew Stafford, it could change everything for one particular team if they have everything else in place.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what New Orleans does, because I think that's the team that, to me, has a lot of pieces. And when Drew moves on, you know, you hear Kirk Cousins' name with the 49ers, and I just kind of shrug my shoulders and say, okay. But that, it feels like the Saints are the team to me. What about you?
Yeah, no, the Saints are absolutely a team to watch because, again, that's a team that has virtually everything in place except for quarterback. And I think, you know, ultimately, you know, no disrespect to Drew Brees, but really when you watch that playoff game against Tampa Bay and really throughout the entire season, the only question mark for New Orleans was the quarterback position and the consistency of play at that position. We've seen Sean Payton talk up, you know, Taysom Hill. He talks about how much he likes him. He's also talked about how much he admires Jameis Winston as well. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if they find a way to bring him back into that system. But I think what New Orleans does, especially considering that they have, you know, limited, virtually no cap space, they are completely in the red in terms of cap.
Yeah.
In terms of what they'll be able to do in terms of acquiring a new quarterback, I think their options are pretty limited and strained. So with Drew Brees potentially and likely moving on, I think that they have to take advantage of the roster that's in place right now because it's in contention to play to compete for an NFC title right now. And they virtually, whoever they end up adding, I trust Sean Payton to maximize whoever they get behind center.
Anything else you want to add about this upcoming offseason? I know the league calendar doesn't start till mid-March, March 17th, but some things you may have heard, you may have read, some people you may have talked to, it's, you know, Brad, I'm really interested in this player or this team and what happens to them.
I was going to say one team. It's definitely the Chicago Bears. You know, I think them getting a quarterback, they're another team that is a really good example of being virtually a quarterback away from being a competitor within that NFC. And I think once they figure out the direction that they want to go in, even if it is if it ends up being a Carson Wentz, I'm very intrigued to see how they end up developing or at least working their system to try to re-maximize and kind of revitalize his career after having such a struggle, you know, this past season in Philadelphia.
Good stuff. I look forward to visiting with you. Kalen has agreed to come on this show from time to time and drop knowledge. So we're going to call it Dropping Knowledge with Kalen Jones. If you're KJ, I don't know. We'll come up with something. KJ drops knowledge, something fun, but you're doing great at the Ringer and appreciate your time as always.
Of course, Brad. Thanks for having me.
There's Kalen Jones. We're back with more. Of course, you can check out all of Kalen's content over at the Ringer after this time out.